Interview with the Podcast Vampire is a retrospective on the filmography of living legend Tom Cruise, hosted by Dale underscore A, Jonesy Loves Beer, and Slim.
Tom's 27th film from 2005, Steven Spielberg, War of the Worlds.
It's like we never left. I feel like we got through this war, that we're at that farm.
We just went through our own war of the worlds with Jonesy updating his Mac to Catalina. The first update it's had in maybe maybe 7 to 10 years.
Since I opened it from the box. So my second son was born October 2015. And I had a MacBook Pro then, I think. Then maybe 2016, I buy this iMac. And I have not updated it until about 7:15 p.m. this evening. Everything's great. I had some high anxiety. I mean, there's no, I mean, breast hacks. I'm not a computer person. I don't know how to work computers, but, you know, with the help of my two friends, we are currently recording. I feel like Tom must have felt when he definitely worked in a shipyard and must have moved thousands of containers to the, you know, Tom was called the best natural container man they had never seen on set. Like, feel like Ferrier loves beer when it comes to updating Catalina.
Jonesy is going a mile a minute right now.
My blood pressure is through the roof.
We need to get Jonesy a sedative. Dale, your thoughts on where we netted out with that update and Podcast Vampire coming back?
I got to tell you, our net out currently, I would say, is at, you know, an 8 or a 9 right now. We almost called it. Slim has taken his teeth out 3 times tonight based on the prospect of us maybe recording, or maybe the icon is just going to bounce for the rest of the night.
I'm not proud.
I don't have dentures. We're talking Invisalign. That's how I refer to my Invisalign retainers. I call them my teeth. Okay? 2005. We're here. Tom is here with us in spirit, as always. And you know that we're here to go through Tom's filmography. We have a writer who is finally updated to Catalina. Jonesy loves beer. Thank you for being here.
You know, thank you. I feel like I am Catalina. Mm-hmm. Like maybe I was an old shell of a computer, but now I'm ready to step forward a new generation of iMac OS.
VP of business for the Paper Cake Radio Syndicate. Now a, I'm going to go ahead and say it, megastar.
Oh,
thanks to the official launch of Bat and Spider with a dear friend of the show, Chuck Forsman. Dale, you're the busiest man in PRS history. Podcasting wide, welcome back to the show.
Feels great to be back. You know, in spite of never leaving the house these past 8 weeks, I've managed to keep busy, you know? I've managed to put my hands in all kinds of pots. One could say I'm the, you know, the Ferrier longshoreman of the year in terms of keeping busy and doing it all on my own time after everybody else in my house goes to bed. So roughly 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. I'm doing stuff. I'm, you know, and if it, when it comes to editing podcasts, 3:30, 4 a.m. Right? That's a fact.
I can corroborate because Dale knows that I'm probably the only one in his contacts that is awake.
Yes.
At the time he edits, and we actually chat nice, quite nice chats at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm the only one answering.
Yeah.
Could I, if I may, extend to you a compliment, Dale? Would the universe collapse on itself? Would you be willing to take this compliment?
Yes, Jonesy.
I do not like horror movies. Not my shtick. I will absolutely leave every light in my house on that I pay the electric bill for if I watch one horror movie. But especially starting with your Black Sabbath episode, the show has reached beyond the point of that has to be your interest to check it out. You guys hit your stride. I actually want to watch Black Sabbath for the first time ever. Want to watch, go find a horror movie. And your guys' chemistry is amazing. And I will say, and I said it to you in text, but I'll say it again. Mm-hmm. Your editing is top notch for someone who just is getting their feet wet with it. And I just want to pay you a compliment. It's not a joke. I realize I'm usually the grouch. I just want to honestly say I really enjoy Bat and Spider.
Joseph, that really means a lot. I appreciate it. And yeah, I'm trying to edit this thing. And if it sounds like we've hit our stride, is because I'm editing all the discomfort out. Trying compliments, passing the compliments right along to our Hostmaster General, Slim, to try to run a podcast while you're on it is near impossible. And I admittedly, freely open, I struggled with it on BookJug, and I'm struggling with it now. So I know I'm getting better at it, and it's tough to keep people on track, keep the show moving.
Unreal, Bat and Spider. Taking the internet by storm, it's like Dale's a seasoned pro, you know, right off the bat. Mm. You just got the Jonesy official, the gracing of, it's like the Pope giving his blessing on that new podcast.
I'm like the old gunslinger who's gone into retirement, has no podcasts, and I just hand over my old Cult Single Action Army.
It's because your Mac hasn't been updated in 8 years. I think that's why you're retired.
I feel like my Mac has been retired for quite some time.
If Jonesy's Mac decided to retire tonight, I think all of our podcasting would be retired as well. I mean, it was getting close.
This thing would have been in my township-approved recycling can. Right. If it 5 more minutes of PM me off, it would have been over for this computer. I think it got wind of that.
You know what's not retired? Tom Cruise, mm-hmm. 2005, mm. War of the Worlds, Steven Spielberg, they're reteaming. Mere years after Minority Report, they said, let's do it again. What can we do together that's going to be even bigger, allegedly, than Minority Report? Jonesy, what's the synopsis for this film?
So War of the Worlds follows the Tom, obviously, as Ray Ferrier. Ray is a dockyard crane operator, according to his foreman, if that's the title, the best that's ever seen. I mean, they're trying to just slap off union regs to get this guy working around the clock. But peel back a layer, and Ray Ferrier is maybe specialized. Maybe that's the one thing he's good at. Doesn't have his home life together. He's got a Ford small block 302 cubic inch displacement engine on his kitchen table. He's got a Shelby GT 350 as his daily driver. Mm. I mean, these are not decisions made by a father of two. So we see that he is indeed divorced. His ex-wife brings the kids for a long weekend for the wife's baby moon, you know? But while they're there, a huge lightning storm takes place, an unnatural lightning storm. And it causes these ancient alien machines to rise up from the ground, piloted by aliens who have, according to narrator
Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, I couldn't quite get there. Morgan Freeman have been making dark designs on the earth. So Ray, in a mad cat scramble to get his kids to safety on a farm from his former mother-in-law, death, destruction, human beings totally losing any sort of society, just a crazy look at human nature during a disaster, let's call it. And then in the twist ending, which I believe is the original ending from the radio broadcast, the aliens were not prepared for the microbes, our small friends, and they basically catch cold, from what I understand, and then finally give up the goat, and the military is easily able to defeat the war machines with an outstanding role that I had forgotten about from Tim Robbins.
Ugh, outstanding. You kidding me?
War of the Worlds. Really? I thought, in my humble opinion, because I hated Tim Robbins in that, in my head, I was like, that must mean he's a good actor. If he can make me hate him, and I've liked him in the past.
Man, I don't remember the last time I saw this, but can you imagine how jazzed people must have been? Well, I would presume they were jazzed about Tom around this time, but like War of the Worlds, is there like a bigger movie for Spielberg to take on at that point and be like, we're making an alien invasion movie with Tom Cruise? Like, that's got to be the biggest S ever.
Yeah.
Right?
It's got to be huge. I mean, just the, you know, the legend of War of the Worlds and the original broadcast on radio and how it caused such a panic in people who didn't know what was happening and, you know, all that mystique around War of the Worlds. And then, you know, you get Tom Cruise, who has been in more action-y type movies, like, but he's the leading man. I mean, he's been the leading man for years at this point. And Steven Spielberg? Good grief.
Dynamite.
It's good grief.
Yeah, I can't remember what I was thinking when this movie had come out, or if I was excited or what, but just a crazy situation for both of them to be in. And yeah, I was thinking about Tom working on these docs, and we always talk about how historically he's like always training for the role, you know, doing the background. Do you think he was just on the docks like moving those bins for, yeah, like, for 6 months?
For I want to think like a full year of walk up time. And you know that somebody's like, you know, for an actor, man, he could really move those containers, you know?
And you know, during this training, you know, everybody that had to actually work at that dock were instructed not to talk to him, but he was trying to relate to them on their level, but reality, he didn't really want to have to like deal with them. And so he's like forcing his way through normal conversation while they have to train him. And it's probably just a huge thing.
Classic Tom like form, after he's done as an apology, he buys him a motorcycle or something like that. You know?
Right.
None of this is confirmed.
No. That's just our interpretation. This movie continues the kind of like Spielberg lighting train, you know, that like he made Minority Report look, have its own style.
Definitely.
This one also kind of has like a weird foggy, I don't know, like the break of the sun in the morning. It was kind of hard to explain. So like when I was watching this on Vudu, I bought it. I bought it on Vudu. So I was watching, I was like, is this not HD? Or is this just like, I couldn't remember if it was just how it was presented, but the majority of the front of this movie, it's very hazy. Did you guys notice that at
all? Yeah, I thought that was my, because I bought it on, I did purchase it. I purchase all the Tom movies for the show, just so you know. I try not to stream if it's free. I think he needs my help. You know, he needs the residuals.
Yeah.
But I thought it was the Amazon Prime, like, file. Mm. Like, it didn't look right. But then after the lighting changes, what it takes mostly at night, it's very beautiful.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, changes. those dusk scenes are just, it feels like, remember the Daredevil movie with Ben Affleck where it was like washed film? I kind of feel like similar effect was used.
This, I actually, you know, I got a new TV in my office, 4K, and I rented this in iTunes and it's 4K and it was beautiful. I mean, there was a haze, but it was like this crisp, I don't know. Yeah, you're right. I mean, but the fact that they nailed the fact that it was 8 o'clock in the morning and the sun is just coming over, you know, the Hudson, and he's got to race home and, you know, meet his kids that are being dropped off so early in the morning. But they really did make it feel like it was first thing in the morning. Like the sun must have just came up as they open up the shot of him inside the, you know, the container mover longshoreman device.
I know this has been talked about at length on Spielberg movies. He's got a thing for failed fathers in all his movies pretty much, but man, Tom is a terrible father in this movie. Like, he is just the worst. And I don't think we saw a lot of flawed Tom until maybe Live, Die, Repeat, where he played like an obviously flawed character.
May I? Minority Report, he's kind of a low-key scumbag. You start to see that the cracks of fear after his son had died, you know, using drugs.
He got addicted to drugs, but I don't think he was like,
He was totally not a character flaw.
He was high functioning. I mean, he was high functioning.
Don't let me ever get addicted to drugs around Jonesy. My God,
oh, man.
It's a sickness and I will nurse you back to health. You
know? How many listeners did we just lose?
My sweet summer child.
God, Jonesy is making it very clear where he stands on drug addiction and falling into the traps of which are related to that. Now, I will say that he, you know, the small block on the table, like we get it. Tom, wake the F up. Your kids are coming over. You know, get yourself together. How do you not have food in your fridge? I get you're upset with this divorce, but you still have that badass car. You can't spend $20 on getting groceries for your kids to come over to the house, Tom.
Or how many bedrooms did that beautiful New York house have and they still share a room? What's in the third bedroom, Tom? I wonder that question for the entire GD movie.
Another engine.
Another small block. The movie starts and kind of explains, which you don't maybe catch until the end, if you're not familiar with the War of the Worlds plot, but Dakota Fanning plays the daughter. She gets a splinter and Tom eventually kind of wants to help, but she says her body will push it out anyway on its own. And which is kind of is the thread of the entire movie with these aliens. But this is the first time I've seen it in a long time. The first half of this movie I thought was amazing. Like I felt like this was really intense and real. Like he's got his kids over and these lightning strikes happen in the back, like in their small town. And it's kind of cool at first, but then it starts to get scary. His son took the car against his wishes and he has to go track him down in the city. And that's where the entire town coalesces around the lightning strikes. The set piece of the city was awesome. It felt like an old school film where there's a set piece of a city, you know, and Tom knew his neighbors. There's so many interactions between him and his neighbors, which I thought was just a really nice small touch. For these like rando side characters to just appear and help the story progress. I thought that stuff was great.
You're absolutely right, Slim. The whole downtown of, you know, I don't know if they're Jersey City or some New Jersey side of New York, but it was like this Back to the Future kind of vibe where, it was just that downtown block of area. It was like all these old New Jersey buildings like you would have seen in the, you know, the opening credits to Sopranos or something like that. Everything was long established and of a certain architecture, and it really worked for the setting. And they really sold it that Tom was just, you know, neighbors with all these people, and he had these probably way better relationships than he had with his kids. And that came across very well in the opening sequence where the aliens came down to, you know, jump in their spaceships that they planted, you know, eons ago. And I completely forgot about the Morgan Freeman part of this movie, the whole, you know, them basically they're kind of like setting you up to explain to you what is about to happen. And, and it was,
and the ending.
And
he explains the ending.
Yeah. And he totally explains the ending too, which I was kind of like put off at first, but it makes sense that, you know, they're just telling the story of this whirlwind, like 16 hours in the life of what just the F happened in the world. And, you know, he's basically, Morgan's just tying things up for everybody.
Two things that I would, and Dale, just to build off that, I don't know if this was intentional or just me filling in the gaps. I liked how that the alien killer craft, whatever it is, were not just buried in cities. Like maybe it's just me, but it seemed like the aliens would have no idea where the population centers would eventually become. So I imagine these are like out in the field somewhere. One was just at a bottom of a river. I mean, I'm sure they're getting directions on where to go after the fact, but it was cool that, you know, it wasn't like all major cities around the world, simultaneous attacks, kind of like with Independence Day. It was more like a scattered effect and that the threat was growing.
Yeah.
But as far as the big characters, which I really enjoy, like especially with the mechanic that he tries to get to come with them.
That was if a you fantastic wanna live, scene.
We meet that guy he's got to have less than 2 minutes of screen time, But I was so invested in that mechanic, what he's vaporized, it's like you literally gasp. I mean, as far as the as Slim was saying, like the writing, the first act, it's so tight and it really sets up the suspense. I mean, it a credit to the screenwriter, it like every moment pops in the first hour of this film.
Yeah, up until, I mean, I think the thread throughout the film, you know, the film obviously takes a, slows down a lot when they get to the farmhouse. But before that, it is incredible how this is just a character piece set against a terrible scenario, right? A terrible, maybe unrealistic scenario. But the relationship that is developed from the beginning of this movie throughout the entire thing, and the growing up that a father has to do, who was never really had to pay attention to where he was as a father, and at the drop of a hat, you know, I think Dakota calls him out on it, but he's just trying to get him back to their mom's house. You know, he literally doesn't know what to do. So he is much like probably how it was when they were together and married. He probably just defers everything to the responsible one in the relationship, right? The responsible one in the relationship wouldn't have an engine block in the dining room and would have separate bedrooms and all that. And he's just, and they're there to spend the weekend with him, and he is not prepared at all. And, you know, you see when he goes to take that nap, when he first gets home and he tells Dakota to order food, you see how much growing up that they're doing outside of this bubble of Ray Ferrier, who is not growing, you know what I mean? Just by the indication that Dakota's okay with the splinter and she orders this hummus and health food, like that's not in Ray's world at all. And the fact that he has to go from 0% father to 150% father because of the scenario that he's put in, I was on edge the entire time. Like, what are you going to do next? Realistically, what are you going to do next for your kids?
Right.
To keep them alive.
I was thinking the same thing. Like, what would we do? Like, the scene where he runs through the ash of his neighbors and gets home and is, like, in a state of shock and then says, like, we're leaving in 60 seconds. And then they start to, like, pack up and they're just walking through the town. I don't know how he got there before anyone heard these monsters. It feels like it's happening two blocks away.
Yeah.
But then he's like, they steal that van. That entire van scene is legit as hell. I love that scene where they just steal it because it's the only vehicle where it works.
Incredible.
And they drive off. Everything after that, the revolving camera while they're on the highway. Holy cow, what a shot.
There were a couple moments of my notes that are like, of course, I saw this in theaters. And I just, some parts I didn't get because I wasn't a parent, but seeing this movie as a parent, I feel like I say it a lot for Tom's movies. Seeing it as a parent is a totally different heartache. There's one moment where Dakota screams at the brother and said, if you leave, who's going to take care of me? And you just see the look on Tom's face. He's stricken.
Then
the scene where he's trying to help his neighbors get on the ferry because they get over the collapsed bridge, and then his son breaks away and saves a couple people. The look on his face were like, I didn't even know what kind of man my son is. Like, I never knew that he was like this. Mm-hmm. And then finally, the last scene where he's got to choose between the two. He's trying to convince his son, don't go with the military. We have to stay together. And that couple almost takes Dakota because she thinks she's in shock. They're going to take, you know, they're going to adopt her, essentially take them with her. They would have never found her again.
Oh, no, never.
And let's see where he chooses to let him go to go get her. I mean,
don't do this. I want to be here.
You want to fight.
I need to see this.
I know it seems like you have to, but you don't.
Please,
you
let don't. Me go.
Okay, wait. What are you doing here all by yourself? Sweetie, you've got to come with us, please.
My dad's getting my brother. I have to stay here.
You can't stay here. I'm not going to leave her alone.
I'm not letting you do this. You can hate me. But I love you! I'm not letting you do this!
Dad!
It's gonna be okay. You need to come with
me. I can't get away. Please, you don't want to.
It's choosing between the two of them, but also, you know, at a certain point, at what breaking point or what threshold do you let them make their own decision and you have to, and you just have
perfectly
to trust them?
Perfectly illustrated.
Such a wild scenario, but it was a perfect scenario to say, well, I mean, at least he's got a little bit more of a chance, right? My daughter's about to be kidnapped by somebody, rightfully so, who, you know, they just want to take care of the little girl too, but she's defenseless. You know what I mean? Like he can join, like in that split second, he can join the military. You know what I mean? Like you're just thinking in your head.
And you have to weigh all of that in like less than 2 minutes. I mean, I would never let my 16-year-old son go join the military during an alien attack.
But I didn't, you know, I was early 20s, you know, during 9/11 and this movie, and I didn't really pay attention as much, but all these scenes like just gave me super 9/11 vibes a lot during this watch.
Yeah, they reference it too, like pretty obviously. A few times people are like, is it the terrorists? You know, is this a terrorist attack? Like this is 4 years, maybe when they filmed it, 3 years after. So it was very top of mind, I think, when this came out.
Yeah, and especially at that scene at the farmhouse when he has to let his son go. I mean, you know, you think of Pearl Harbor, you think of 9/11. How many people's kids just wanted to run off and join the military because they felt like they wanted to do something? And you as a parent... You could either sign off for them to join at 16 or 17 because they weren't old enough, or they were going to run off anyway and somehow lie about their age to do it. Like those kind of decisions. I mean, I'm getting chills just thinking about it, but like what kind of decisions do you just have to throw your hands up and just say, you know, okay, well, I guess this is the way it's going to be. I can try to foster and maintain this, you know, a relationship, or I can have no relationship with my son who is about to run off and join the military because, I mean, it's their decision, right? But an alien invasion, 9/11, Pearl Harbor, they have every right to want to, you know, join the military and, you know, make a difference, essentially.
To play devil's advocate, I didn't buy that plot line at all in this movie.
Really?
I didn't like it. I didn't like the son stuff that much. I didn't feel like, I wish they would have added something at the front of the movie where he explained, you know, like he's doing studies related to war. I know they briefly mentioned he's doing the French invasion paper, but I don't know. It just didn't connect with me. Like him wanting to leave and fight like right away while his sister is with this incompetent father that they have. Like, it just didn't make sense to me. And I guess maybe it would make sense if there was an actual alien invasion. But even the scene where he leaves and goes up this hill and, like, running and into the war, I don't know, that scene just, like, drug too long for me. Like, go get your effing daughter. She's being drug away by strangers. Let this idiot son of yours go up this hill and get blown up. Like, you don't know what's going on over this hill. What are you going to do? You going to get a rock and throw it at one of the alien ships? Like, you have no guns. People are driving in tanks, and the tanks are exploding. What do you plan to do once you get over this hill? Okay. Like, that's where it shut me out, like, that scene.
Guess we know how you feel.
But it's
he's wearing his baggy cargo pants. Does he have a grenade in those baggy cargo pants that he's going to throw in an alien ship?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it worked. It eventually that worked, right? But yes, you're right. But I mean, if anything, if shit dad that he is, he's got, when it comes down to it, he's got one job: to keep him alive, right? I mean, so that's what he was trying to do up until his last, you know, fiber in his one finger that was holding on to his son. Like, if you go that way, I'm not going to be able to keep you alive, and that's what my job is. But eventually, you know, he had to just let it be. I mean, you know, obviously they had a really bad relationship, and, you know, from the very get-go, like, he lives in, like, Jersey City or Hoboken or somewhere up there, and Effin takes the car. Like, he steals a guy's car, and you know, it could have been a lot worse if he didn't run into his son, you know, before S really started hitting the fan.
Yeah, how about the scene where they get locked into that house, where they go to the house, they go to the kid's mom's house, you know, hoping that she hasn't left yet, but she did leave and there's nobody in the house. And they hear like all these explosions. They think it's the alien invasion happening outside the basement. And then he goes outside the next morning and there's a crashed like 747 outside. What an amazing set that was.
That set piece blew my mind.
Yeah, I mean,
how good it was.
He just opens the door to the basement and the entire city block is like sheared off. Just the basement door is standing. It was incredible.
Oh, how about that moment where he's got to tell Dakota, like, don't look anywhere. Keep your eyes down, because he knows that's going to F with her so bad to see that kind of mass destruction. Like, she's not equipped to look at him.
How long were they in that basement for?
I think one night.
The plane is empty. There's no bodies anywhere. And by the time he goes outside, there's some guy rummaging for food. And then this reporter starts eating these like biscuits and bottled water like she hasn't eaten in a week. It's been a day in this alien invasion. What is her problem?
They are rummaging. He is rummaging like Vigo in the road. Like, they are hard up.
It's like 6 months for them into this alien invasion, but it's been one day.
And they drove up I think they mentioned like the Pine Barrens, or they mentioned like central South Jersey or something like that. And they were heading north. So they're on the New York side of things at that point. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he is like the camera guy's like flopping and dragging that food cart out of the plane.
Yeah. Insane. I mean, they're getting rations. Like, slow down, everybody. I don't know what the timeline just didn't match up for me. Earlier, I wanted to talk about another scene that looked great was that steeple. Remember the church when it cuts in half?
Oh, and the
sun is coming through the top of that steeple. Oh my God. What a shot. But Amanda was watching it with me, and there's a scene where someone's using a video camera and it drops, and then you see the invasion happening through the lens of the video camera. How was that video camera working? Wasn't all like technology destroyed during the EMP or whatever?
I see, that's what I was confused about, because is the EMP localized? And how I mean is the EMP, like, so I my only knowledge of EMP is GoldenEye. Besides this, and that only took out one station, but then they say it could take out a whole city.
So,
I don't know how modern engines work. How does replacing the solenoid make all the electronics in the car come back on, right? Is it everything separate? Transistors blown? Also, sub question, what is a transistor? You know, so I'm not really sure how the EMP worked. Maybe it was just not exactly what we would think an EMP is, and maybe small electronics weren't affected.
Dale is our EMP expert, so I'm looking forward to this explanation.
Yeah, Dale, please explain it to me like you told me how dumb I was when I was updating the computer. If you could just use that same tone of voice, that would be great.
And Junzi, if you would just please, just for a minute. Now, I figured a small electronics, if it's probably powered completely off during the EMP, I would imagine it's fine, and then you could probably turn it on again. But if it was on, or if it was like middling active during the EMP, like a starter in a car. I thought maybe, you know, like Ray's Mustang. I mean, any old car, right, that doesn't rely on a starter, like maybe you could hotwire it to get it going again. But I have no idea.
I mean, it's a 60s car. It's a carburetor. It doesn't have electronic fuel injection, but it does run off a battery.
Yeah, it's true.
Is it possible that whatever connection between the bat? I mean, we're getting real in the weeds.
Getting real in the weeds right now.
Real in the weeds. How about if we could just take it back to the very beginning, okay?
Please.
Mom, stepdad dropping these kids off. And I mean, this dad's, you know, he's going nowhere this weekend, right? He's like barely going to keep these kids alive before the aliens come. And then the mom's like, oh, he's got like a 5-page paper he's got to write on your watch. I came from parents that divorced when I was really young, and I would go to my dad's on the weekends, and I can just remember like that little bit of freeing, like stress free from the mom. Like, I'm going to leave that for dad.
Hasn't even started it yet.
He hasn't even started it yet. He's got, and it's Friday morning, Saturday morning.
Is he writing that thing by hand? 2005?
Or on a word processor. Definitely, I mean,
does Tom even have a computer?
No way.
At this point?
He's definitely writing that on the piston casing of that 302.
It's gotta be the worst weekend in that kid's life, having to write that in French occupation paper at his zilch of a dad's house.
And what's zilch dad going to do about it? You're going to finish that, right? Yeah, I'm going to start it tonight.
Say zilch, great word, fantastic word.
And even when they're playing ball, he's like, "You're going to get started on that paper as soon as we're done this catch here." God, Tom, you're the worst. Just the absolute worst. I wanted to punch him in that entire scene.
Yeah, he had to, and he sold it too. I mean, he really it's almost like he wasn't trying to be that dirtbaggy. That's how good of an actor he was. But I mean, he's dragging his kid out to have a catch. What?
He studied with dirtbag fathers for 6 months while filming this movie. How about this kid looking like Timothée Chalamet from 20 years ago, 15 years ago? Like, he could be his brother, his older brother at this point. Just like him.
Chalamet and all Paper Keg Network podcasts right now.
The river scene was cool, where she needs to go use the bathroom and then she's like comes upon this river and all these dead bodies float by.
Oh, what a great scene.
On cue that all the dead people from the plane go floating by. Following her this whole time.
All those missing dead bodies. God, can you imagine how hungry that reporter was during that scene? Just hasn't eaten in 3 hours.
They had to get up early and get dressed and leave right away.
There's a lot of Twilight Zone-esque moments in this movie. The scene where they're driving towards the ferry and the crowd of people and Tom has a gun and it just gets totally chaotic where they have to give up the van to someone who also has a gun. Very Twilight Zone-esque and dark. Yeah. But also Tom breaking down and crying, I thought was a beautiful scene where he realizes he can't do it and he just like cries in front of his kids.
I thought that scene was very interesting too, because it just felt right, because, you know, dad, he falls asleep and lets his son drive, but
drive through a mob.
Right. Only one who doesn't even have his license yet, he's going to get that deep into a mob like that. Like, as soon as, you know, dad's driving, I'm just saying his like instincts would have said, no, maybe not follow where all this is headed, because look at that road up there. But son, you know, leave it to son, and he falls asleep. So, you know, you're going to get whatever scenario son drives you into. I thought that was a
also,
good
how do
scene.
You, how is it not spoken ahead of time? Like, avoid crowds, son. Like, I'm going to doze off. We have one rule. Avoid people.
Yeah. Son, please. That wasn't said? If I might fall asleep, but please, you know, just be safe. Don't avoid people. They will kill us. They will tear us apart for our van.
Even the son, like, he's 17. You don't have the presence of mind to be like, I think I see a crowd of maybe a mob up ahead.
Right.
Should we go check that out? We're the only working vehicle in a 100-mile radius.
Oh, my God.
I feel like fine. The scene where he told him, let's go to the ferry, is on the cutting room floor. Like, if there was just saying, like, I'm going to sleep, but we need to end up here.
We need to get to the ferry.
Would have done that scene a lot of good. Mm-hmm.
Golly, so annoying.
Yeah, when the neighbor has their kids, and they're forming that human chain to get through the crowd, and they make it on the ferry, but just last minute she lets go, and she's screaming, Ray, help me, Ray, Ray, and he can do nothing.
What was the point of that neighbor? Could they have not done that scene without this random neighbor that we didn't know anything about?
I think
or
it just...
Or did they need like something extra to elaborate on them getting onto the ferry? Her whole cameo just felt very strange to me.
I thought it was just like maybe dotting the I of how regular human relationships are going to break down. Mm. Like, you know, he had his kids safe on there. Yeah, he wanted them to come, but he was not making sure they made it. You know what I mean? And the crowd is... But him trying to explain to the soldier... There is plenty of room. You can let the rest of these people on here. Just create a crazy interaction. I think, illustrate how bad it could go.
Yeah.
I also felt like angry at Tom during that scene. Like, what do you think? This cop is just going to be like, oh, you're right. Everybody on. Like, that's not happening, Tom. Like, are you aware of what's happening around you?
Yeah.
Like, also, you're going on a boat and these tripods are maybe 300 yards from you and they have laser beams. How safe are you going to be on this ferry in the middle?
I'm thinking one of those Iron Man repulsor rays cuts that ferry in half. Yeah. Then you're drowned to death. Like what almost happened to them.
You're in a worse spot going into this water. Yeah. Like, I mean, if you're not an amazing swimmer, game over.
I can tell you, I've driven to Boston maybe 8-10 times. I've never gotten aboard a ferry to get there. Not once.
Soon after this, the Tim Robbins scene happens, and they find Tim Robbins. He has a shotgun. He's like waving them over, like, come on in here. Come on in here. The next 4 hours of this movie takes place in the basement of Tim Robbins' home, allegedly his home. Mm-hmm. And this is also a very Twilight Zone-esque scene, in my opinion. You know, like the main character kind of getting into a situation that is maybe an unexpected, kind of a kooky character. I can see this in black and white being like a thing in earlier War of the Worlds movies,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, but, like allegory or the equivalent would be like that the bald guy from OG Night of the Living Dead. Like, he's got his family, yes, in the basement, but he's definitely reckless.
Man, this scene just took forever. Like, I was so hot on this movie up until this point, but this scene for me just took all the good stuff away. Mm-hmm. Like, it just takes forever. Tim Robbins, I felt like, was chewing the scenery. Make him a little bit more believable at the onset, and then devolve into like a psychotic character that wants to go to war at whatever cost. It just didn't work for me. Also, the stuff with like the tentacle coming in, like Minority Report was 3 years before this. Steven, you don't remember you did this almost exact same scene in Minority Report?
I don't feel this scene was well executed, nor did I particularly believe the effects. And I try to think, is that just because it's 15 years old, or did so much of the budget go into bigger things, and this was kind of like, this is the best we can make it look.
Right.
If that's the case, if that's the best you can make it look, then the decision should have been something else.
The one note I have right before this hour-long farmhouse scene was the perfect feeling of not knowing what to do and still having kids.
Mm.
Because, you know, we're just who we are. The three of us, I mean, other than some growing that we've done, we're still the same people that we were when we were 16, 25. You know, now we're almost 40. But, you know, for me,
easy,
I know...
Easy, daddy. Easy.
I know that, you know, there's... Like, I'm just the same person. I don't know what to do half the time. You know, I am, like, lost in myself. I'm not a decision maker. And now... But now, like, throughout up until this point, you got kids now, and... You are the decision maker, even though you're not, you don't know what the F you're doing half the time. You got to make it up as you go along, because you have kids and they're looking to you for courage and confidence and decisions. Yeah, the farmhouse scene was just, I mean, it was a long time. And even post-infiltration, like the eye stalk in there from the tripod, and then with the aliens, it just took forever. That was half... The scene was only half over when the eye stalk makes its way into the farmhouse. And it was just...
Dreadful.
It was dreadful.
Dreadful, in my opinion.
And it...
Just terrible.
It was... The only thing I pulled out of it was almost like between the emergency response that they show on screen, like the organization of everything, where there's, you know, like the depots for people set up at the ferry, like there's... You know, American Red Cross or, you know, like type situations. And then obviously, like the National Guard and the military is like mobilizing at this point in the movie. It's like this farmhouse scene was almost like, and maybe it's more, you know, 9/11 type vibes, but it's, you know, it's the first time there's been like war or fighting on US soil since like the Civil War, right? So it was like modern day. Like when you see 1917 or you know, a World War II movie, like using houses and neighborhoods as cover, as places to sleep during combat, you know what I mean? So it was, I appreciated that, and it just, it gave me those vibes, but I mean, it wasn't an hour and a half long. So, and eventually, I mean, Tom just murders Tim Robbins.
Finally.
Murders him.
Golly.
I did think that was a strong character moment from him, from a guy who, not a great father, but it clicks. And he's like, in order for my kids and myself to survive, he's got to die.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's the tipping point where maybe Tom finally says, I get it, but in the worst way possible for him to get it. Mm. Like the worst way to learn that lesson of being a father is to have to kill somebody to protect your kids.
How do those tentacles not have heat vision? You know, they're at the height of alien technology. They don't have heat vision to see through walls.
Well,
wake up, aliens.
These are definitely the older models because they were buried here eons ago. So, you know.
But they have laser beams. They have some kind of crazy laser beam.
Yeah, maybe they're low tech
laser
beams. I mean, are we critiquing those poor guys right now? They had such a rough time when they died.
I'm glad you said that, though, because it did seem like, you know, so much relied on technology that if a human were in charge of, say, create something alien, but a human, you know, you said that to another human, they would obviously use like human man-made materials to do that.
Right.
And that's what it felt like, right? There was no like, well, they're aliens, you know, this was very mechanical in nature, but why did it have to be? And that was the only reason I could think of is because that's how, who was it? Orson Welles. That's how, you know, the inspiration comes from, but you know, it could be anything.
Yeah, why tripedal, you know?
Yeah, tripedal with like flashlights on the eye stalk to see.
Mm-hmm. She runs out once the aliens or the stalk comes in for the eighth time in this scene. She finally runs away. And another shot, which I love, is where he kind of like walks into what has become this like blood city. Really cool shot where everything's red. They're kind of like farming human beings for their blood to live. And creating like, you know, fertilization over everything. And there was actually another cool scene before this, but where when he realizes that the spray coming into the basement is actually human blood. Mm. Thought that was a really cool scene. And they get kidnapped. She gets kidnapped by one of the tripods. And I thought this was a really cool scene where he's like freaking out. He finds some grenades in an old Humvee, destroyed Humvee. And at that point, you're like, you're screwed. Like if you're Tom, like that giant machine has my daughter. What am I going to do at this point? He just starts chucking grenades at this thing. And then he gets kidnapped too. And
which, right, he had a 10% chance of them scooping him up and not lasering him. You know what I mean? Like less than 10%
exactly,
chance.
Yeah.
I was like, Tom, they're just going to cut you in twain with a laser.
I know. I mean, that's a very good question though. Like why did they destroy people versus kidnap them? Like, what is the delineation point where like, no, I'm not going to vaporize you. I'm going to kidnap you and use
maybe they're like, we need to thin out the herd of maybe military response. And then once we have their infrastructure crippled, harvest them.
Start harvesting.
Is there
maybe?
But, you know.
Yeah.
I would have loved to see where they explain that as well. But I guess it's War of the Worlds, there was no explanation when it's a radio broadcast. So maybe that's the same sensibility they're bringing, like we just don't know their motives. It's something we can never know.
I was thinking, so when Tom does get kidnapped and in that basket that's hanging under the tripod, that's where I got like the biggest 9/11 vibes, because it just felt like the plane that went down in Pennsylvania, like and they figure out that the passengers fought back, and that's kind of what happened. Right. That's where I really felt like, well, that it's either that, or you could do something from within that crop blood basket, right? And that's what they decided to do. Luckily, they had grenades from, you know, somebody that was previously kidnapped and hanging in the basket. But, you know, they had to do something, and they could luckily do something rather than all just get put into the shredder.
Yeah, right after this, pretty much all those people that were kidnapped just kind of start walking, you know, to wherever he's trying to make his way, finally to Boston. And they see some of the tripods are like crashed, and he's asking the military like what happened. Nobody really knows. They're just acting erratically. And there's another one that keeps moving, and he sees that the birds are flying on it. He tells the military that the shields are down. They destroy this thing. And he meets up finally at his ex-wife's house to kind of show that he was able to do it, drop off Dakota, and then the son reveals himself. He was somehow made it back home too. And that is the end of the movie. They don't really, so like, if you didn't have Morgan Freeman narrating the end of this movie, there is zero inclination that you would have surmised, if you didn't know anything about War of the Worlds, the teleplay, that the common cold destroyed these aliens. There is nothing in this movie to say that.
Yeah.
No.
I agree.
It is a 16-hour alien invasion, and they just so happened to stop invading and start falling over. I mean, there's
I thought nothing. This movie was in a desperate need of a 1 year later. Like, it needed it to just maybe slide into home. But the ending feels so abrupt.
Mm-hmm. It does.
It totally takes you out of the movie. Like, if Act 1 and Act 2 are home runs, and you're like, Act 3, not so strong, but a good, solid ending, this movie is much better than it is as presented.
Even, like, when the aliens leave the ship, when he's in the basement, and they're kind of, like, walking around, like, maybe have one of them just, like, croak or, like, fall over when they, like, smell a flower or something. Yeah.
Like sneeze
some
or
kind
something.
Of tease. Yeah, a sneeze, and then it's like, oh, what was that all about? But like, there's just nothing. Like, there's just absolutely nothing. And I actually, to the point where I Googled Spielberg, I literally Googled War of the Worlds ending explained. And because I wanted to see what people thought about this ending. And even Spielberg said that they didn't nail the ending at all.
Oh.
They had trouble getting the ending right. But then he even said that, like, well, Orson Welles also didn't really get a great ending. So, but even so, man, just a very weak ending. And you could almost feel like they just tacked on Tom pointing to the military guy to shoot at that one machine as like the ending. Like, oh, Tom did that. Like, he alerted one military guy that the birds, like, right. Are you not doing your job as a soldier to realize that the birds are on the thing that now you can shoot at them?
Yeah, as Longshoreman Ray Farrier realized.
I mean, they were trying to give Tom some kind of expert power this movie because he's like, try the solenoid. Oh, the van works. Go here. Go to the ferry. Oh, we're on the ferry. Mm-hmm. Okay. Shoot the monster. Oh, okay. It works out like, it felt like they were grasping at straws.
Well, they
just
still
be a regular guy.
Yeah. They still had to make him like leading man hero because, you know, in spite of being a deadbeat father.
Right.
I mean, a guy is at a mechanic shop and for 20 years in a neighborhood doesn't need to ask the container guy how to fix an engine, in my opinion.
Remember that scene in like Scary Movie 4 where it like mimics the scene and like the Tom Cruise character who's, you know, at the end is on the Oprah couch and like twisting Oprah's wrists, but he's like in the car and he wants to let his Anthony Anderson friend in, but they can't like unlock and lock the door at the same time. So they can't get in the car. It's so ridiculous.
This was, I think, released when he was doing promotion for this movie. I think it was the big Oprah couch moment. And there was something on the wiki that I have no idea if it's true, but allegedly Spielberg was a little bit perturbed at his promotion of this movie. I think that's when the backlash against Tom really kicked in hard and might have affected the movie's performance in general.
And probably their relationship. They haven't worked together since, have they?
I don't believe so. This is, I don't know. It's fine. The first half is really good.
Yeah.
But it just falls off the rails, I think, the Tim Robbins area, and doesn't really regain itself.
Boston towny Tim Robbins and his accent.
Oh, God.
We're the resistance.
Ugh. That accent.
Gross.
Just chewing it up for 90 minutes in that basement with Tom Cruise.
I do feel like Tim, the character of Tim, wasn't originally in the script, and he just kind of wandered into Steven's office one day and said, I'll be in this. What do you think? I'll go
what
all
you
crazy?
Think of this accent, Steven? What if I'm in the basement and wearing a shirt?
I find this
case of schnapps, and I give it to Tom, and then we, this is what I'm doing, and then I say I'm part of the resistance in this accent.
And he murders you know what? Me. That sounds great, Tim. Tim, I like that a lot. Let's do it, Tim.
Tell Susan I said
talk
hi.
To my people. How about the his neighbor being Michael Scott's girlfriend from The Office?
Yeah. Oh, my God. I didn't even put that together.
Yeah.
Is it Jan?
No,
the not Holly, Jan. Holly, oh, Holly, the other HR.
Oh,
woman.
Right.
The mostly, like the most normal one on the show, right? She was.
Mm-hmm. She was. What's Number after one. War of the Worlds? What's next
are,
on our
Are doc? You ready? It's yeah. Total Palate Cleanse, Mission Impossible 3.
Oh, yeah.
Return to form. We're going to have, it's a barn burner of a movie.
Wow.
And then after that, we'll just, you know, play out the next couple of episodes. Lions for Lambs, which I've never seen. Valkyrie, which I've never seen. And then he does that cameo in Tropic Thunder. I don't know if we'll actually watch that since he's not a leading actor. And then after that, capped off that decade is 2010's Night and Day.
Very strange stretch of movies for Tom after Mission Impossible 3.
Yeah.
And you would think catapulted in the stardom, but I wonder if this was him riding the wave of his backlash before he was ready to be leading man.
I think the backlash hit hard during this and Mission Impossible 3. I honestly think Mission Impossible 3 probably went way under the radar.
Oh, yeah.
When it came out.
Definitely.
And maybe he just got nothing. And then during the resurgence of the MI movies later, I think people started to peck up about, judging by his swing of movies after it.
New generation of people watching movies at that point, you know, because there was such a time difference between 3 and 4.
I mean, I'm just looking at this decade, the one we're in now, and it kind of, you could see Tom's taste, because it starts off with Ghost Protocol, and I will name everything in that movie, take it out of the trash, Ghost Protocol. I love Ghost Protocol as the title. Mm-hmm. After that, Jack Reacher, Oblivion, Edge of Tomorrow, Rogue Nation. And then he doesn't stumble again until The Mummy, but then he's back with American Made, Fallout, and then his next movie of this decade when we talk about Maverick. So it's almost like Jesus. He does stumble, but then gets right back up and says, maybe he just says, you know what, I love sci-fi. I'm going to make 5 sci-fi movies that I want to make. You know, and then in between he does a Jack Reacher, like a leading man, small picture. I mean, it feels like he's definitely recovered. He's still Tom Cruise.
Was Ghost Protocol the Knocklist one?
The Knocklist was like, the first film.
But I feel like there's another list.
No, that's Fallout with the daughter of...
There's a list that he's in charge of in the one that takes place in like Saudi Arabia almost.
That's Ghost Protocol, I think.
We gotta check the... intern to tell us if there's a Knocklist.
Am I watching every Mission Impossible movie tonight to see what the second Knocklist is?
I think there's a list. I just wanted to say the villain in that movie is very good. And then towards the end of that movie... The end of that villain was thought was very shot very realistically, and it like took me a second to adjust myself when the scene happened. Keep that in mind.
Like the villain in Under Siege 2.
Are we watching Under Siege 2? Can you imagine doing a Steven Seagal podcast?
Oh my God. I would never want to do that.
What?
I can't think of worst nightmare. Steven Seagal podcast. Just kidding. I used to love all those movies. What's the one where he fights the capoeira guy, the drug dealer at the end? He's got a cane
Under
sword.
Under Siege 5.
Under Siege 5, cane sword, I think it's called. Operation Cane Sword.
Under Siege adjacent, if I may.
Okay. This is going to be a great story, everyone. So if you could please turn up the volume in your cars.
Erica Eleniak, star of Under Siege 1, who jumps out of the cake topless. She just turned 70 years old.
The fudge out of here.
So in terms of, you know, where we are, as terms of, you know, where we're getting older.
This is unsettling news. I think we should end the show on the news that Erica Eleniak is 70 years young.
Erica, happy belated.
Can we get Erica on for our Under Siege episode of our Steven Seagal podcast?
I just Googled
it. What's the brainstorm of the Seagal?
She's 50. You're going to tell us she's 50 years old?
So, I just checked to the show intern. She is now 50 years old. I did see
70. What made you think she was 70?
Well, because I was, you know, on like ESPN or something, and they had those clickbait
headlines.
Was she
born in 1970?
I don't even think Betty White is 70 years old.
Erica Liniak, gorgeous for her age.
I gotta look up an actress that is actually 70 to just compare actress.
Slim, if you don't edit this from the podcast.
Oh, we gotta keep it in.
Meryl Streep is 70.
Oh, that's
Sigourney Weaver.
Body that won't quit.
Erica Liniak's PR agent is emailing us right now.
I hope Erica Liniak's agent is taking care of the BuzzFeed clickbait headline that is running around the internet duping people. That's what I hope.
You won't believe this topless star is 70 years old.
Star right, of,
we got to wrap
star
up.
Star of Charlie Sheen's Chasers.
Oh my God, I used to love that movie. He's like a clown, right?
A clown like he's a real clown or he's like...
He plays a clown.
He's like a deadbeat kind of...
Rest in peace, Erica.
All right, I'm gonna name some movies to you right now. Above the Law, Marked for Death.
So many good
titles. Hard to Kill, Out for Justice, The Glimmer Man. That's the one I can't... That's the one where he fights the cane sword. Roseanne, the TV show.
Oh, man. Emmy winning.
Executive Decision.
That's the one where that one.
Kurt Russell.
Yeah, Kurt Russell was the bad guy in that one. Blew the doors off of everything.
Out for a Kill.
All right, next week, Mission Impossible 3, potentially the biggest episode we've ever done. We're still waiting back to hear from Tom's people if he's going to come on the show before we wrap up his filmography in the near future. Stay tuned. Dale, thanks for being here. Thanks for your Erica Liniak knowledge. Jonesy, thank you for updating your Catalina.
Listen, Mac. If his pull quote for your editing isn't Erica Liniak is 70 years old, I'm going to be super disappointed if that's not his preview clip.
Yeah, Jonesy. Fuck me.